This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Syngenta, delivering better food for a better world through outstanding crop solutions.
It's President's Day. The post office is closed and so are the markets. Let's take this day off from regular business, celebrate the presidents that have made this great country what it is, and retrace some of the steps we've taken together over the past couple of weeks. From the headquarters of Farm Journal Broadcast, this is AgriTalk. In the President's Day edition today, we're going to spend most of this morning's show with a special edition of Signal to Noise. That means after we take a recovery lap from a couple of weeks on the road, we'll hear from Farm Journal News Director John Harith, Pro Farmers Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer, and Farm Journal Milk Editor Annalisa Laca. Okay, so what you're going to hear on today's show is something that users of the AgriTalk app hear every Friday afternoon. Well, it's most Friday afternoons. John, Jim, and Annalisa have a busy schedule too, and sometimes schedules change. But on most Fridays, these three separate the signals coming out of Washington, D.C. from the noise that makes for, well, you know, it makes for the confusion coming out of Washington, D.C. And here's the deal. It's an important show. It's not just a good show. It is an important show. And the reason for that is we've got Jim Wiesmeyer with 40-some years of experience in Washington, D.C. The guy has got connections like no other ag journalist, and he brings his conversations that he has every day, every week, every month, and he brings them into Signal to Noise. And then we've got the curiosity of John Harith, of Farm Journal News Director John Harith, and the curiosity of Annalisa Laca from Farm Journal's Milk, who really just pull the details of what has been happening in Washington, D.C. out of Jim Wiesmeyer. And it is such an interesting concept that we've put together in Signal to Noise. And like I said, it's available on the AgriTalk app. Make sure that you're listening to it on the AgriTalk app. It is such an interesting concept that we thought, heck, we need to make sure that people understand exactly what is going on in Signal to Noise. And we're going to do that on President's Day today. And I mean, what a better day to focus on what's going on in Washington, D.C. This Signal to Noise is the latest and the greatest. It was available over the weekend on the AgriTalk app, but they did it in such a way so that we can bring it to you on AgriTalk with the markets closed today and everything. Now, I said also that I want to take kind of a recovery lap from what we've been doing together over the past couple of weeks. And think about it. We've been in Fargo. We did our shows from Fargo and the Northern Corn and Soybean Expo. And then for me, it was off to the Wisconsin Dells where the Wisconsin Corn and Soybean Expo was. And then we were together in Louisville for the National Farm Machinery Show. And then I went from Louisville back to Minneapolis for what was kind of a different event, and that was Pheasant Fest. And here's what struck me at each of these different stops along the way. I want to go back up to Fargo to start this. And you know, honestly, guys, when we got up there to Fargo, I thought it was going to be kind of a pit of depression, but because there's just not a lot of reason to be optimistic up there. The reason I say that is because they've got half of the corn crop in the field. If you want to find one spot where the trade war with China has had an intense impact, it's that northern soybean producing area that over the last few years has just taken a crop, loaded it onto a train, sent it out to the PNW, and then they go over to China. It's 80-85% of the bean crop up there in the Dakotas that is harvested and gets marketed that way. It's sent on train to the ports over on the PNW. So they've had the big impact from the trade war with China. They've got half of that corn crop out there in the field. You know, when we were talking with guys up there, some of them were saying, you know, I don't know if I should be here or not because yesterday was the first day that I was harvesting corn. I mean, that is unbelievable that that's what they're up against. And it's interesting. Now, from one perspective, those that have not had a lot of experience dealing with a crop in the field from one, you know, that is carried over from the fall through the winter into the spring, they're very nervous. And obviously they should be. If they've never done that before, they've got reason to be nervous. Now, on the other hand, I talked with one gentleman that said that this is the seventh time that he has carried that crop from the fall through the winter into the spring. He hasn't cut an acre of corn yet, and he's not worried at all. He continues to test it. He's checking that moisture. He's checking that test weight. And he said, as of right now, that corn that is still out in the field is just getting to 50-pound test weight. In other words, it's just getting to the point that he can actually market it. So if it's not a crop that he can even market, why in the heck would he go out and harvest it? That's what he's decided. So he says, and boy, I hope he's right on this, but he's got a whole lot more experience on it than I do. He says that that crop will get better over time. He said the crop is getting better, and it will continue to get better and give him a better opportunity to market that crop going forward. So, I mean, if you're looking for a reason to be optimistic, I guess there it is. I guess that's the spot right there. That corn crop that was unmarketable last fall without a lot of extra expense is getting better as it sits in the field. It's hard for me to believe, but boy, that's what they're looking forward to up there. Okay, now let's hop over to the Wisconsin Dells and the Wisconsin corn and soybean growers. You know, I'll admit I didn't get to spend as much time with these growers as I did with the growers up in Fargo, but you can get a feel pretty quick for what is going on. And many of the growers at this meeting have had about enough. I think it's because of what the dairy industry in the state of Wisconsin has been going through, or maybe it might be what the corn and the soybean growers are going through. But when they see what's happening to the dairy industry in the state, it's been really difficult for those guys to deal with a lot of the adversity. And I think it's showing up among the row crop producers. Nonetheless, I think there is some optimism in the state. And hey, they had a tough spring. They had a tough harvest. They got most of the crop out. There's still a few scattered fields that need to be harvested, but for the most part, they're ready to go and go hard into 2020. Now, down to Louisville. I mean, what can you say about the growers at the National Farm Machinery Show? Every year, it's one of the toughest crowds to read. And if for no other reason, it's just the sheer size of the crowd. But it's easy to tell the difference between the tire kickers and those that are there to really learn about the new technology that is available for the 2020 growing season. And plus, I get to talk with Ken Ferry. I got to talk with Alan Hoskins. I got to talk with Missy Bauer. And Bill Biederman from agmarkets.net. Now, finally, last week, I wrapped up with a stop in Minneapolis at Pheasant Fest, and admittedly, this was a different gig than what I'm used to, but that didn't make it any less rewarding. You know, heck, we talked about putting more dollars to the bottom line, not on a whole farm basis, but on a field-by-field basis. You want to talk about drilling down. That's how you drill down to profits, no question about it. All right, let's get this signal to noise going. Coming up next, right here on this President's Day edition, we've got Farm Journal News Director John Harith, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer, and Farm Journal Milk Editor Annalisa coming at you with a special edition of Signal to Noise right here on AgriTalk.
2019 marks 40 years of Syngenta and its legacy company's work in seed treatment research and innovation. Ross Weichel, head of Syngenta Seed Care in North America, says a commitment to a robust pipeline is key to success for their customers. Ross joins us now. Hello, Ross. Tell me a little bit about that commitment to developing new solutions.
We've become one of the best innovators in the industry because of the resources we invest to keep our R&D engine humming. On average, we spend over 10 years and nearly $280 million to develop novel seed treatment molecules. Our current new product lineup and pipeline are truly tremendous.
Thanks, Ross. We'll hear more from Ross next week, but for more stories from Syngenta, head over to www.syngentathrive.com.
Save a bundle with a bundle from John Deere. Now through March 15th, save 15% on disc harrow parts with the new Pick 3 and Save program. Saving is simple. All you have to do is pick three or more select disc harrow parts categories, purchase $150 minimum of genuine John Deere parts in each category, and receive 15% off on all parts. Visit your local John Deere dealer today. Dealer participation may vary. Some restrictions apply. Offer ends March 15th, 2020.
The mighty Prosaro, king of fungicides. Its fast action and long residual make it the keeper of grain quality and yield, the hammer of head and leaf diseases, the number one reducer of scab. When your goal is greater wheat quality and higher yield, use Prosaro fungicide, and the crown of higher profit will be yours. Learn more at prosaro.us. Always read and follow label instructions.
Are you over 50? Would you like to get up to 33% more income in retirement? Then call now for this free book, Annuity Do's and Don'ts for Baby Boomers, from a leading financial firm on maximizing your income in retirement. That's right, free. This free book reveals little-known truths about annuities in simple-to-understand terms that will help you make the right choices before buying an annuity. And it's free. As a bonus, we'll also throw in a free annuity rate report summarizing the rates and benefits from financially strong insurers.
Call 800-806-9013.
That's right, annuity do's and don'ts for baby boomers and annuity rate report, both absolutely free for calling today.
Call 800-806-9013. That's 800-806-9013.
Producers have the appropriate licenses for the products they offer. Increased income is possible using strategies suited to your goals and may require buying multiple annuities and holding them full term.
Hey, AgriTalk listeners, this is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio today. That's profarmer.com/radio.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture is what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
And welcome back to AgriTalk, and welcome to DC Signal to Noise. That's right, it's kind of a twofer today, Jim Wiesmeyer, an unusual setting for us as we do both our DC Signal to Noise podcast and filling in for Chip Flory on the Monday President's Day edition of AgriTalk. And you've brought along a special guest today for us, Jim.
I always like to have a lawmaker, and he's a good one. Congressman Crawford from Arkansas, I believe first congressional district, and I was recently this week in Arkansas, Jonesboro, at the university there in Jonesboro, and several of them mentioned Mr. Crawford to me. So you've got a good reputation, Congressman.
Oh, that's great. Well, the Ag Business Conference there at Arkansas State University is something we always look forward to. It's about 27 years, I believe, 28 years it's been going. And I mean, I remember going to that when I was in college there at Arkansas State. So it's been around a long time. It's a great service to the region.
And Congressman Crawford, a very influential member of the House Agriculture Committee, in fact, rising up in the leadership of that committee, and has been involved in a lot of the activity in the House Agriculture Committee. So we definitely appreciate your time today. And also, worth mentioning, Jim, a little bit of radio background for the congressman.
Yes, I noticed that in your bio. Pretty good. We've got a compatriot on the show.
I'm a recovering member of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. I had a farm news network here in actually spanned about five states. when I started it with just a handful of stations and grew it to about 53 stations at its height. And I sold that when I got into Congress. Being on the Ag Committee, I wanted to make sure I wasn't doing anything that might present a conflict of interest, so I sold the network. And but I've always enjoyed being in farm broadcasting. I've done that in television and radio, and it's a passion of mine that I miss quite a bit. But I learned an awful lot as a result of it as well.
I was going to say, this is why you are so articulate on the issues. You can capsulize, you can put them in capsules for understanding, and that's much appreciated, Congressman.
You bet.
Yes, indeed. And Congressman, we'll start off with, when we started the email conversation with you about coming on the podcast and AgriTalk here, you expressed an interest in, I think, a sentiment that we're feeling across the country, especially in ag country, which is, okay, we've got impeachment and everything else behind us. It is time to start taking action on the issues that really matter for America. What is at the top of that list for you?
Well, I serve on the Intelligence Committee and I serve on the Agriculture Committee, and believe it or not, I find every opportunity to, to look for a nexus between the two of those committees, and there are a lot of areas where you can discuss. Most recently, Dulles International Airport, a Chinese national, was interdicted carrying a bag of dead chickens. This is, now keep in mind, the subtext here with coronavirus, that we're in a crisis, potential crisis situation. I don't think we can say that it's kind of the pandemic level yet, but it's certainly a concern globally. And here we have an individual from China that comes into the country with a bag of dead birds. That's a problem for me. Now, I've brought this to the attention of some national security people, and they don't seem as prepared for this as they should. And so, it give you a little further background. The latter part of last year, there was a shipment of pork products that came from China that arrived at a port in New Jersey. This was, yes, not in a refrigerated cargo shipping container. It was mislabeled, and you have to think it was probably deliberately mislabeled. And of course, after 45 days at sea, or whatever the time was, by the time it arrives in port, it's essentially now a shipping container full of hazmat. And so keep another little thing in mind here, the backdrop of African swine fever that's taking place in China. And again, the question is, are we prepared to deal with the potential threats to our food and fiber sources here in the United States? Those are strategic necessities that we have to have to feed and clothe and shelter ourselves as a nation. We do that better than any other nation in the country. And it stands to reason that anybody that would want to do us harm would probably seek to exploit those gaps in our food supply. And so this is a priority issue for me, and I'm paying very close attention. I'm telling anybody who will listen. I've been talking about this since I got in Congress, but I've really kind of tried to be very discreet about it for fear that I might sound the alarm and create more problem and make us more vulnerable to threats. But it's clear to me now that any threats that we have are readily exploitable by an adversary that seeks to do us harm. And so we can't bury our head in the sand anymore and pretend that we're going to be fine and this is an area that no one would dare touch and everything's fine. No, we have to be very diligent about these threats.
Yeah, one thing that struck me about those birds in the reporting on that the birds were immediately destroyed, and no indication that any testing was done to find out if there was a pathogen trying to be introduced into the United States.
You said a mouthful right there. In fact, I've been in contact with CBP and USDA, and unfortunately, we're victims of policy that probably did not anticipate this type of thing. So they were, by their policy, just required to incinerate those birds without exploiting any kind of potential intelligence they could extract from these, and doing, as you suggested, doing the pathology on these dead animals and being able to say just exactly what was contained in those dead birds and was it a threat. Certainly, I would assume that it was, but because of the current construct, protocols dictate that they just remove that and destroy based on if there is a threat, we need to eliminate the threat. I get that.
That was the same case in New Jersey, if I recall,
sure,
where they didn't test. Wow.
So what we've got now is we've got two incidents that I think are going to require us to reexamine the protocols in place that would basically indicate that, okay, once we've seized something like that, then I think that the next step is find the appropriate agencies, and that may be Center for Disease Control. It may be, you know, some other agencies that participate or collaborate on that, and extract.
Well, I would certainly think USDA's Plum Island.
Well, certainly, and I mean, we've got the resources. We just don't. We apparently have decided that these things aren't really all that necessary. Where we come up short, quite frankly, and this is, you know, you think back to 9/11. Who imagined anybody would fly planes into buildings? It's a failure of imagination, and that's where we see adversaries exploit weaknesses and vulnerabilities. And so I think we're going to have to tighten up those protocols in the case where you interdict a bag of dead birds or you interdict a shipment of rotten pork. It makes sense at that point to allow those individuals on site to exercise the discretion to not just destroy it, but to extract whatever information we can with regard to the pathology of those shipments and keep that on record and make sure what we're dealing with, and that informs our intelligence community and helps better protect the United States.
In a legislative initiative, Congressman, what panels would that fall of on the jurisdictional side?
Well, I think you're going to have probably DOJ, you're probably going to have Homeland Security, and you're probably going to have USDA all working together on this.
Okay.
Because certainly there are some legal considerations to be addressed where DOJ comes in. Homeland Security is all about just what the name implies, about keeping our people safe. But the expertise resides in the Department of Agriculture for the most part when you're dealing with commodities like this. And so I think that these agencies are going to have to develop a more robust interagency protocol to address these threats. And if they need some further authorities from Congress, that's what we're looking at right now. What do we need to do in Congress to say, hey, don't just incinerate. Let's get together and make sure that we're getting every bit of information we can beforehand. Certainly, that's the end result is that shipment is going to be incinerated. We know that. It's a public safety. It's a public health issue, and I get it. But I think that you can add the step of a technical exploitation of that pathology to make sure that we're prepared for anything that may come down the pike.
In the chicken situation, did they do some follow-up questions, why they brought them in and things like that or not?
I'm not sure. And so, you know, we're still in ongoing communications with both USDA and CBP on this deal. And I'm not trying to drop either agency in the grease at all. I think that what we have are a bunch of very professional people that are doing their job to the utmost. If there are failures, it's probably failures to recognize the need for them to have on-site authority to do an exploitation, technical exploitation. And so I don't fault the agents on site, whether they be CBP or USDA. If anything, I think we just need to revisit the authorities that we've granted these agencies to make sure that they're using every resource possible to protect us and also to take preventive measures.
All right, we need to take a break. We're talking with Congressman Rick Crawford on the special edition of the DC Signal to Noise podcast and AgriTalk. We'll be back after the break.
Want to restrict your freedom and crush the spirit of your crops? Never fear. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of superior weed control is here with Liberty Herbicide. Stand proud with greater application flexibility, unmatched convenience, and excellent performance combined with the Liberty Link, Liberty Link GT27, and Enlist trait systems. And it has no known resistance in U.S. row crops. Talk with your BASF rep or authorized retailer about Liberty Herbicide. Always read and follow label directions.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is The Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, The Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Good morning, AgriTalk listeners. This is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady with your Markets Now update. U.S. markets are closed today for President's Day. Grain trading will resume with the overnight session this evening. When traders return to work, much of their focus will remain on China. Traders will continue to watch for increased Chinese buying now that the phase one of the trade deal is officially in effect. But questions remain about how the coronavirus outbreak will impact China's pledged purchases and timing of those buys. The other focus is South American crops, which continue to progress favorably. Forecast signal rains will continue to fall across much of Brazil the next 2 weeks. While rains are slowing harvest progress in central Brazil, these are not the same as the heavy prolonged rains that cut yields and hurt crop quality last year. In fact, Brazilian soybean crop estimates are rising. Markets could get a better read on Chinese demand at the end of this week when USDA releases its initial projections for the 2020-2021 marketing year, but a clearer picture will likely come in May when USDA releases its first global new crop balance sheets. Focus in the livestock markets will also be on Chinese purchases as traders clamor for increased demand from China. With Chinese frozen pork stocks dwindling and soaring pork prices fueling an 8-year high in consumer inflation in China, it is likely to ramp up purchases of U.S. pork. It is also likely to increase purchases and shipments of U.S. beef and poultry. Trade in the cattle market could also be influenced by technical price action after futures signaled potential bottoming action late last week. Follow-through buying would confirm a low and that the fund liquidation that weighed heavily on futures is complete. For Markets Now, I'm Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Hey, Jim, how would you describe our D.C. Signal to Noise podcast?
It's a dairy parlor analysis of the D.C. politics that impact America's farmers and ranchers.
Dairy parlor analysis? What do you mean?
No bull.
Download the D.C. Signal to Noise podcast with Jim Wiesmeyer and me, John Harith, every Friday on agweb.com, the AgriTalk app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sweet strawberry icing.
You're in Goodwill and just past that vintage denim jacket you spot. Miniature donut earrings. You lean in. Ah, that's the scent of shopping success. Because at Goodwill, every item you buy funds local job training and more. So bring home those donut earrings and bring home so much good to your community. Goodwill. Bring good home. Brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
And welcome back to AgriTalk in a special edition of DC Signal to Noise podcast. And Jim, for folks that listen to AgriTalk regularly but may not be familiar with DC Signal to Noise, it's a weekly podcast available usually on Friday afternoons or evenings where we kind of sort through the news of the week in DC in ag policy. And you tell us, all right, this is stuff that's important. This is the signal we need to pay attention to. And, well, this other stuff here, it's just noise filling it out. And it's kind of fun. Kind of bringing that focus to ag policy on a weekly basis.
Yeah, I agree, and it's needed from our listeners, telling me and you about that. And 80 to 90% is noise. That shouldn't be surprising, but boy, those critical issues that we get signals on are a must have, as we heard in the first segment. Congressman, I was just in Arkansas, and the number one question there amongst farmers in attendance, and wherever I go right now, of course, they want higher prices for a host of commodities, but they want to know whether or not there will be another market facilitation program for 2020. And they don't buy the timeline that USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue and, frankly, some bankers on the Senate hearing this week have said it's too early to tell, because I don't know how many bankers you talk with, but the working capital is down 80 to 85% from the peak in 2012, and right. That's not going to change in the near term. We would want your opinion on: do you think there'll be a need, and on a possible timeline?
I'm almost certain there'll be a need. Whether it's a question of whether or not the resources would be there, and whether or not the administration sees it that way. Quite frankly, I think there's an awful lot of people in Washington that feel like they're ag policy experts. And one of the things that we find, nobody wants to be on the ag committee, but when we're working a farm bill, suddenly we have 435 ag policy experts in the House. And so here's the thing. I mean, will they need it? More than likely, there's going to be a need there. The question is whether or not now we're not talking about the farm bill here, because the CCC is going to be the administrator or the source for an MFP, as it has been the last 2 years. And so that is extra extraneous from the farm bill. It's not part of the farm bill per se. And so it's really out of our hands in Congress to be able to say, yes, issue another MFP, another round of MFP. So I'm really not in a real good position to say whether it'll happen or not, but I think I can say fairly readily that probably it would be needed. Whether or not it's going to happen is above my pay grade. I think that you're right. You raise a good point. Working capital is steadily declined. We've got people, and here's the other issue: is we've had it's never if, but when and how bad when we're talking about natural disasters, and we've had our share of them just in the last 2 years. If you've been in Arkansas recently, as you have, then you probably know that we've got an awful lot of water. We're probably going to end up in a flood situation, probably right around planting time. I mean, I just crossed the Mississippi River this morning again, and it's high and could complicate planting. I mean, we've had problems at harvest with rains. This is not just here. It's widespread. Hurricane Michael was a problem. It took almost a year to remediate with regard to disaster relief, and it was really not sufficient to meet the demand. We've had widespread flooding up north in the upper Midwest. We've had fires. You name it. We've had it in the last 2 years on top of the need for market facilitation payments. So, the resources are stretched thin, and that's going to be a consideration when it comes time to talk about another MFP.
Are you hearing for pushback from more urban and suburban lawmakers on the market facilitation program? As far as why is it needed for potentially third year in a row? I mean, farmers are asking me that. I hear some of it, but I don't hear a lot of it, at least at this time.
Typically, when you hear the most is actually during when we're in the throes of working up, marking up, or working on a farm bill. That's when you start to hear you really start to see that divide widen between urban and rural constituencies. And there's really not a political identity to that. I mean, farm bills, the political bedfellows in a farm bill season are really astonishing. And so what we have are we have a lot on both sides of the aisle that are dead set against farm bills for a variety of reasons. And even though their reasons for being against a farm bill may be different, their motivation, essentially they're on the same team because they're trying to prevent a farm bill or do everything they can to derail progress or whatever. And I, look, I'm not questioning their motivations. Each one of those representatives has to go home and answer to their constituents. But the bottom line is we have to retool this conversation when we start talking about supporting farmers, because farmers, from my perspective, and I think if we sat down and talked to folks who are far removed from agriculture, on the production side, we're all involved in agriculture because we all eat. But from the production side, folks that don't have much of an understanding of how that works, well, farmers are essentially a pass-through. We're investing in the production, not the producer. And so it's in our interest to take a different look, get a little different perspective in just exactly what we're asking taxpayers to do, number one. Number two, how much we're asking them to invest, because we invest in our farmers at a fractional rate by comparison to other industrialized nations. And so what are we getting out of that investment? And I would say we're getting the cheapest, safest, most abundant food supply on the planet, and how that materializes to the consumer Well, it's about 12% of your disposable income. Now, if you're not happy with that, you have the option to move to countries in Europe or, you know, Japan or India, where they spend well over 25% of their disposable income on food. And it's amazing what we're able to leverage by making these small investments and the multiplying effect that has in the marketplace to stabilize the market basket. These conversations we need to have with non-farm legislators so they can get a better handle on exactly what it is we're doing and why we do it to support these pass-through entities that just happen to be the ones who are responsible for feeding and clothing our nation, which is a strategic mandate. It's a national security imperative that we be able to sustain our ability to feed and clothe ourselves.
You know, I think there's probably even more focus now than MFP than on the WIP Plus program. Obviously, some interest in your district. And there's a push now to expand the parameters of that. Plus, we're facing, what is it, I think a $3 billion funding cap on that at the moment. Is there going to need to be more money put into that WIP Plus program? And is there capacity to expand it to some of the other areas that have been facing weather woes?
I think you just answered that question in that, yes, there's going to be a need. Is the capacity sufficient to meet that need? And I would say no, probably not. We are under fairly tight constraints, you know, in fiscally speaking, you know, and with this backdrop of $23 trillion in debt. And so we have to exercise some fiscal restraint. And so people who don't really understand are quick to just, I've heard people in leadership positions refer to cuts in agriculture as low-hanging fruit. And I find the verbiage to be almost ironic that they use that term. And you know, maybe metaphorically speaking, it's low-hanging fruit. But what we're really doing is over the long term, we're going to change the trajectory on the number of farmers that we have, the number of people that are producing our food and fiber, and the cost associated with it and what we get out of it and how that benefits us here in the United States. So I would like to see us have a more fulsome discussion about why we do the things we do to support farmers, why agriculture is a different business model than, you know, than the typical traditional business model of, you know, building a widget or, you know, engaging in some other type of service. It's just a different animal. And I think we need to educate as many people as we can so that they know why it's valuable for them to take a portion of their taxpayer dollars and invest in national security through food security.
And on the WIP funding, John, I think in December, Congress did move around, if you will, $1.5 billion. So I think there are some additional funding in a big way. I know sugar beet growers, both in you know, North Dakota and Minnesota, will get some of that much needed funding. Mm-hmm. So they did find some additional one. And I think that was the work of the House Ag Committee. Ranking Member Conaway was a big mover on that one, as well as you probably, Congressman.
Well, one of the things that, and you mentioned this with sugar beet growers, so, you know, there's so many areas that are sort of left out of the conversation, and there's so many commodities that are essential but are not talked about as much as they should be. And as those growers up in the northern regions, in North Dakota, Minnesota, that, you know, that was a significant shot to them. And we need to make sure that whatever resources are out there, that everybody's given equal consideration. Sometimes there are, you know, regions and certain production and things of that nature that are sort of left in the lurch. And that's going to be a difficult thing to address too. And you know, I've started to see more articles about the merit of things like MFP and WIP payments and so on. And isn't that why we have a farm bill? Yeah, I get it. I understand their perspective. I just think sometimes it's ill-informed. And I think where we need to do a better job, I think, is as folks who are in the ag industry. I come out of the ag industry, and I have chastised my counterparts that, you know, the industry doesn't do a good enough job collectively to explain the value of what they do, why it's important, and how that manifests in the marketplace and what it means to the individual consumer. And so I think we're going to have to do a little bit better job. And you know, quite frankly, there are a lot of programs that are in the crosshairs. There are a lot of groups that really want to do harm to farm programs as they are. And then big question, or the big conversation I think we're going to have is, we're in the 21st century. We have farmers that are really employing cutting edge technology. And, and really adapting on the fly as technology changes. I've seen farmers adapt new technology halfway through a crop year. That's how fast technology is changing. And yet we're reliant on a farm program, farm policy system that was hatched in the Depression era and has not kept pace with a 21st century economy. So we're going to have to do, I think, a lot of introspection in Washington, and we're going to have to really have some sit-down conversations with growers across the country and say, where's farm policy going? Where should it go? And how do you help us get there?
We need to take one more break. We'll be back with more AgriTalk right after this.
Visit aggrowth.com for more information.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
This is Brian Grady, Pro Farmer Editor and AgriTalk Market Analyst, inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers and what to watch tomorrow with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio to start today. Unbiased and free of advertisements, you'll get our detailed, time-tested advice for cash marketers and futures and options users, along with our premium analysis to give you the information that you need. Visit profarmer.com/radio right now to start your free month. It's fast and easy to start, and there's no long-term commitment.
Commodity Classic is unlike any other event in agriculture because it's created by farmers for farmers. Farmers determine the entire schedule, from the educational sessions to the trade show to the entertainment. Your experience is focused on the questions you have, the challenges you face. You'll walk away with answers, ideas, and a renewed energy about your operation because farmers just like you have made sure you will. See your future clearly at Commodity Classic in San Antonio, February 27th through 29th. Visit commodityclassic.com.
Got grain? AGI Westfield has you covered. Through a commitment to farm-proven designs and innovation, AGI Westfield has earned a reputation for superior quality grain augers. When it comes to portable grain handling, you can count on AGI Westfield to be ready to work when you are. Visit aggrowth.com/Westfield for more information.
Got equipment to sell privately but tired of scams and hassles? Then list it for sale on MachineryPete.com, the simple and secure way to buy and sell equipment online. Reach millions of buyers nationwide. Connect with legitimate buyers. Get pricing guidance. Don't wait. Sell it yourself on MachineryPete.com. Visit MachineryPete.com and click on Sell Mine.
The first 24 to 48 hours after planting are critical to reaching the full yield potential in your seed. BioForge Advance from Stoller helps crops guard against weather-related stress that robs yield. Get your crops off to a great start with BioForge Advanced Seed Treatment this season. BioForge Advance can also be used in furrow, at planting, or in foliar applications. For winning yields in every field, start with Stoller and BioForge Advanced. Learn more at StollerUSA.com.
Find it now at ShopFarmJournal.com. Brand new to the shop is The Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, The Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at ShopFarmJournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at ShopFarmJournal.com.
3, 2, 1. Oh no. Which button am I?
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear... Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ag Council, and Make Safe Happen.
At Brandt, we're once again breaking ground on groundbreaking technology. It's called EnzUp, and it's a revolutionary product featuring new enzyme that helps prime the soil for success at planting by boosting enzyme activity and creating a rich environment around the seed. This function helps plants emerge quickly and come out strong, which gives the crop its best chance to face what Mother Nature has in store and can increase yield up to 15%. So don't break ground this season without the groundbreaking technology of EnzUp enzymes by Brandt. Find EnzUp at brandt.co.
I'm an American soldier, an American. My
when news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
And welcome back to AgriTalk and the DC Signal to Noise podcast. Our special guest today, Congressman Rick Crawford out of Arkansas, a member of the House Agriculture Committee. Go ahead, Jim Wiesmeyer. Continue. You were having a conversation about this importance of the communication with the non-ag community.
Well, I know there's a study in the 2018 Farm Bill, if I'm correct, on the commission looking at agriculture 2050 and the years in between, but it has not yet been funded. Congressman, wouldn't that go a long ways to identify some of these sectors that you've already mentioned that need to be identified? And, you know, how do you deal with it and things like that? And will it be funded?
Well, absolutely, it needs to be, but then we get back to the question of resources that are already scarce. Are we going to take that money and fund a study to look and see where we need to be 30 years from now? It's probably a prudent move, but we probably have greater need, and this is almost like we have to triage these casualties. What's the most pressing issue, the here and now, these issues that we just talked about with MFP and WIP funding and so on, or is it the long-term view, where we're going, how we get there, and what we need to do to make sure that farm policy actually comports with a 21st century economy. Think about this. We're going to be halfway through the 21st century by the time 2050 comes up that we have this authorization to talk about where we're going, and we'll have waited 50 years to get there. And so my question is, what do we need to do? And I'm talking to producers, and I do this in my district all the time. I have meetings with farmers, and I pose these questions and challenge them. And I want to pose this question to ag groups, regardless of what your production is, whether you're in large-scale grain production, whether you're specialty crop producers, livestock, poultry, doesn't matter. Think about where we need to be, where we are right now. What are the hindrances, financially speaking, markets, so on. What do we need to do, and how do we need to get there? But I don't think we have the luxury of 30 years to wait. I think that, and I think that, yes, while it may be prudent to look at, yes, let's fund this study, I think we rely too much on the government to make those decisions for us. And I think these are things that the private sector is much better equipped to do, because the private sector can do stuff. It's much more nimble than the government. The government is almost monolithic in the way that it moves. And that's why we have the farm policy that we have today. That's why we're behind the eight ball, and that our policy hasn't kept pace with technology. So I would like to see the private sector to not wait. And we're seeing this happen in other things. I mean, we're talking about rural broadband, and I know that it's important that we invest in rural broadband. But look, the market is outpacing the government's ability to meet that need. And what we're going to see is that the private sector will beat us to it. And quite frankly, I'd be glad to see that happen.
Yes, and what I say in my speeches, Congressman, is we're into the throes of the second industrial revolution in agriculture relative to the drones, ag robots to deal with some of the labor issues. They can't wait for Congress mm-hmm. any longer. And I think yes, the private industry is doing some of the things relative to the
absolutely
very changing U.S. ag sector out there.
And that has to continue. And I want to be a part of that conversation, because I want to make sure we get this policy right. But the most important thing for us to do is to talk less and listen more, because the market will talk to us. We got to listen to it. And our growers across the country are going to talk to us if we let them. And we need to listen and be receptive and not get locked into this institutional mode of thinking, well, this is the way we've always done it, and this is the only way we can do it. That has proven to be a flawed model for generations. And yet people get comfortable with doing things the way we've always done it. And I just don't think that in our economy and in this tech-driven economy that's impacting every industry, that we can be comfortable relying on a fallback Depression-era farm policy model.
What you just said, we need a revolutionary policy, not an evolutionary policy. And I think a lot of production agriculture people would agree with you on that. And for you listeners, what you just heard was a clear signal. That wasn't noise in there at all. And frequently you do not hear a lawmaker talk like that. He's market oriented and a listener. And wow, that, I think that's good news to hear. I can't let go of this conversation, Congressman, without mentioning the importance of rice in your state. And I give a number of rice speeches throughout the year. The U.S.-Japan agreement didn't include rice in the accord because of the sensitivity of that crop in Japan. And I know several senators, your friend Bozeman on the Senate side this week sent a letter to U.S. Trade Rep Bob Lighthizer urging him to include rice in any agreement with the United Kingdom. Can you discuss this and the other issues relative to rice?
Yeah, I'm really excited about the prospect of doing business in the UK. I think if my numbers are right, there's something like an 800,000 ton market. That's pretty significant for us. Yes. And I think we're in a really good position to capture a significant share of that market. That would be very good for us. And that means an awful lot to us here in rice country. My district represents about half of the U.S. rice crop. So we're highly attuned to that. But also keep in perspective that even though we produce half of the U.S. rice crop, overall, throughout the United States, the rice belt from southeast Missouri down into Texas Gulf Coast and then the California rice, all told, is probably less than 3 million acres. I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 2.7, 2.8 million acres. So even though we produce that much rice, we are still, it's a small acres, but we're still in the top five in exporters. And that says something about our domestic consumption and what we need to do to improve that. And so we've got great opportunities to capture market share domestically and also to look at places like the United Kingdom, which I'm real excited about. And I think what that'll do is tee up more opportunity in the European Union. Japan, as you mentioned, they sort of ascribe almost a religious status to their rice. And so they, outside of, the short grain that's grown in California that kind of is marked to market to Japan, I mean, outside of that, they're really not interested in what we produce. We tried some Koshiakari rice in Arkansas on a fairly large scale about 20, 22 years ago. And logistically, it just didn't pencil out for our guys to be able to do it. And then, of course, they weren't really all that receptive because they had historically gotten what rice they do get from the United States from the California production base. And so it's been a tough obstacle for us to try to overcome. But I do think there are other markets that we can capture, and UK is certainly one of them. And then, quite frankly, I think we can do a better job in the domestic market to make us less significant in the global marketplace. But I'd be just as happy to sell all our rice here in the United States if we could sell it all here. But I mean, the point is, we need some global market access, and the UK is really prime.
Congressman, the time has flown by. I can't believe it's already end of the show, but thanks so much. We're going to have you back on to soon to finish the conversation.
I look forward to it. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Congressman, a lot.
All right. And that wraps up today's AgriTalk. For those on the podcast, stay tuned. We'll have more analysis from Jim.
Some measure success by Italian suits, corner offices, and luxury yachts. Farmers measure success differently. It's breathing fresh country air, taking care of the people you love, and knowing how to measure success in your soybean acres? That's smart. With Credenz soybeans, you get a precise variety bred to fit your acres. And that Credenz variety comes with agronomic expertise and local insights from your BASF team. So plant your sign of success. Talk to your authorized Credenz retailer or local BASF seed advisor. Always read and follow label directions.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous one-month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
Thanks to Syngenta for sponsoring this AgriTalk podcast. For more news on Syngenta and the trends driving the industry, head to syngentathrive.com.